Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Bhutang dhammang sanghang namassami. This is the second Wednesday night talk of this Rains Retreat, the 25th Rains Retreat at this monastery. And hopefully that things are settling down for most of you, which means that you're settling in to lots of time by yourself. As I was mentioning many times, that when you do have time for yourself, please use it wisely. Sometimes that you don't have such free time, so when you do, value it. Well, the talk last week was using the understanding of the suffering of life as a motivation to spend lots of time sitting and walking. But it's not just a motivation from the recognition of the pain and difficulty of the situation when you don't meditate, but it's also recognizing the attraction, the joy of stillness and peace. In other words, valuing what we're doing with meditation. This is a meditation monastery, and the huts, the routine, is designed to allow the maximum possible time for meditation. It might not be the best, but it's certainly trying its hardest to give you as much support, as much time, encouragement, teaching, to spend time by yourself. But when you spend so much time by yourself, sometimes that time can be spent just wasted, just sleeping, just reading, messing around. And don't feel guilty about that, because guilt is not one of the things which is going to help you in any part of your monastic life. Instead of feeling guilty about wasting time, you want to investigate. Instead of using negativity, use your wisdom. Why do you waste time so much? And it must be that one wastes time because one doesn't love the meditation. One doesn't sort of incline towards the meditation. One doesn't really want to meditate. And without that motivation to meditate, again, one will waste time. And be careful, because when we waste time, we start getting bored. And we start getting into negativity. So even if you are bored, just ask yourself, why am I bored? Because sometimes that people, they complain when it's the rest of the year, they're working too hard, they don't get enough time to meditate. When they do have enough time to meditate, they think, what am I supposed to be doing? So now you have that time, it's great. And so you can't say that, you know, your meditation is not progressing because you don't have the opportunity. The opportunity is now there, and you'll find out the reason is not because you haven't got time. It's because we have these defilements. And all these defilements, what stop you meditating, all the hindrances, they all come back to the delusion. Looking in the wrong place, valuing the wrong things. So when we are meditating, number one, just change your priorities. What is really important in life? And just contemplate the Dhamma. You know, where do you want to get to in monastic life? Now, do you really want to just be an ordinary person, like an ordinary monk who just gets by? Do you want to be an ordinary lay person who just gets by, who just, you know, gets a little house and gets a job and then gets a pension and then just gets old and gets died just like everybody else? Is that really what life is all about? A lot of people keep on saying there must be something more, there must be something more. And some of you in this monastery have found that something more. This amazing path of going deep into your mind and finding some bliss and some insight which really shows you what life is all about. In other words, it's through the path of meditation, through sitting and walking. And so during this time, really sort of put some effort in. And the effort is not, as I say, after you've sat down. The effort is getting onto that sitting cushion, getting onto the walking path, putting hours and hours and hours into walking and sitting. The more time you put into walking and sitting, Sure, it could become boring sometimes, it become tiring, but just persist, be patient. Because something happens, the more time you put into this, the quieter the mind becomes. I remember telling many people that even if you meditate for half an hour and your mind is really restless or you're sloth and torpor or whatever happens, still that half an hour of just sitting down with your eyes closed just has a positive effect. It was time much better spent than if you had your eyes open, walking up and down, being sort of, I'm not talking about the walking path, you know, doing jobs or being restless. Just the very fact that you sit down, shut your eyes and incline to meditation, even if you're not successful this time, just putting the time in helps. Because what happens if you actually put the time in and you determine that every day you're going to sit so many hours for meditating and you keep to that schedule, you make a schedule for yourself, you give yourself like a time you're going to meditate and how many hours you're going to meditate. And you know, sometimes I've done this, you know, if I don't keep those times up, I don't take sweets or something. You know, just make it sort of quite clear to yourself that you have to do this, it's really important. So it's a bit of self-discipline, that's all. And once you get into that self-discipline, you feel so much better about yourself. You put the time into meditation. You're in here anyway, in this monastery or in Dhammasara. You're in this place. You might as well do something worthwhile while you're here. And of course, spend lots of time sitting and walking. For those of you who know all the names of those monks on the wall of the Dhanasala, one of them is Ajahn Dunn. He's dead now. I saw him twice when I visited Thailand. He's a great monk. He was one of these monks who was supposed to be an arahat, fully enlightened. And his teaching, which he got from Ajahn Mun, was just the simplest of teachings, which was walk a lot, sit a lot. And that's all he remembered. So this was a monk who spent so much time meditating by himself with hardly any other instructions, just walk a lot and sit a lot. And he would spend time in the evening on his walking meditation path. When he got tired, he would sit down on his walking meditation path, sit right there in the sand. And then after meditating, he'd get up again. And even when he got very tired late at night, he would just lay down there on his walking meditation path and sleep there. So when he woke up in the morning, he was right on his walking meditation path and just carried on walking. Now, I wouldn't recommend you to do that here. You just get probably pneumonia from the cold and the wet. But nevertheless, it gives an example of just, you know, how much time this man spent in meditation and how important it was for him, which is why he got enlightened, why he became an arahat. And having met him, you know, I met some of these monks and think, no, but that was a very powerful monk. So, you know, that's one of the monks who say, well, yeah, maybe he was. So, when you meet monks like that and you find out why they became enlightened, it gives you some encouragement to spend that time. When you do spend your time walking and sitting, it just gets too painful to keep walking if you're restless or if you're bored. So because it's so painful to go for restlessness or boredom, you find you have to put some sort of effort in or some direction. By the effort, it's just directing the mind. Okay, so you're going to be on that walking path for an hour, or you got like an evening, there's no talk, you go back, have a cup of tea or something, you go back at 7 o'clock, you got 3 or 4 hours to your bedtime whenever you go to sleep. How am I going to fill that time in? You've only got one choice. Either you waste your time fantasizing, dreaming, or reading books, or doing crossword puzzles. I don't know what people do. Or you can actually say, well, I'm not going to do any of that. I'm going to meditate. Doesn't matter how painful it is, I'm going to just do this. What that actually means is that you find ways of just doing the meditation so the boredom doesn't come up, the restlessness doesn't come up, the painful mind states don't come up. You meditate because you have to meditate. I just, many times in my training as a young monk, when we had all these long sittings together, you didn't have any choice. You had to meditate there. So I remember on one occasion, it was my Tudong year. I'd been 5 reigns as a monk. I was wandering around the north of Thailand. And I remember staying in a very nice monastery in Ampaphang province. But then we were moving from another monastery. And when we went from this one monastery to another monastery, always waiting around for buses and walking and just in the hot sun all day. And so by the time we got to this monastery, it was It's in Ampa Merdeng province anyway, somewhere around there. When we got to this monastery, we checked in with the monks there. And they said, oh, you're just in time. In quarter of an hour's time, we're beginning the evening meeting, which began at 6 p.m. And every evening in this monastery, they sat for 4 hours, from 6 to 10, very strictly. And when you've been really tired traveling all day and just, wanted a bath, no tea or coffee or anything like that. I think I had some Chinese tea. I managed to quickly make a cup of Chinese tea. And then have a quick bath and then rush to the hall to be ready for the 6 o'clock meditation. And you're wiped out, you're really tired. But I remember on that occasion, just when we sat down, and I was just a junior monk, another monk had the gong, had the banger for the gong. He had to meditate for 4 hours. And I realized I was so tired, and aching so much. I realized if I didn't get some meditation, if I didn't do it properly, this was really going to be painful and embarrassing. And so it was really good. You just got into a nice meditation. It was the motivation to not waste time, to say, well, let's really do the meditation properly. Let's go watching the breath. Let's go letting go of all past and future, letting go of the concept of time, because the concept of time, if I had sat there and think, my goodness, 3 hours and 59 minutes to go, 3 hours and 50 minutes to go if I open my eyes. It would just be impossible. So just to let go of all concept of time. And let go of all inner chatter. You find you can do if you have to, if you really motivate yourself. It's not that hard to do for anybody. So, and then just watch the breath. And when you really put some focus into what you are doing, it became quite easy to get into some nice meditation, and I was just having a wonderful time. And I actually ended up getting angry, because the monk with the gong banged the gong at 9:45. And I was having such a nice time, said, you robbed me of 1/4 hour of meditation, because I only did 3 hours and 3/4. When you get nice meditation, that's what you feel like. I just keep it going. I'm having fun. Now, again, I was not born with good meditation. It's just what you learn. And I know as a fact, if you trust any wisdom I have, the meditation is available for everybody. Anybody can do it. And each one of the people in this monastery today can get into deep meditation. You can do it. Just the fact that sometimes people don't do it. They don't motivate themselves. So when you sit down to meditate, just get yourself comfortable and please give yourself clear directions. What are you going to do in the next hour, 45 minutes, however long you sit for? Give yourself directions. What are you doing this for? Don't just go and sit down there and just drift off as if it's just a bad habit. Just like when you go in the car, if you're a driver of the car, the monk sitting next to you tells you where to go. If I just went, I go into the car quite often, going here and there. If I just sat in the car, in the passenger seat, and Leslie was driving, and I never said anything, where would Leslie go? Just go all over the place. I wouldn't get anywhere. So you've got to give clear directions to your mind, what you want the mind to do. It's amazing. If you give clear directions to this mind, it will do what you want. In the same way you give clear directions in the mind, please boil up some hot water, you can have a cup of coffee. You do it, you achieve that. If you say, go to the bathroom to have a shower, you achieve that. So what's the difference with telling your mind, now I'm going to do some meditation for half an hour or an hour? A lot of times people waste time because they never even give themselves any instructions, and the poor mind doesn't know what to do, it just wanders off all over the place. So give yourself a clear direction, what you're supposed to be doing. Even when you do walking meditation, clear direction, what you're supposed to be doing on that walking meditation path. As an abbot, sometimes I do have problems to think about and sort out. But when I am doing walking meditation just to sort out sort of problems and get some ideas, I put my hands sort of behind my back. But when I meditate, walking meditation, to make my mind peaceful, I put my hands in front of my body. And I do that, I train myself to do that. So because I have a different position for doing contemplation and doing sort of calming my mind, as if my mind knows what's going on. It knows what to do by the position of my hands. It's just a little technique, a skillful means which I've developed. So if my hands go in the front, that means no thinking about the monastery or the Buddhist council of this or anything else. This is the time just to be quiet and just watch the sensations in my feet. And I put my hands behind my back. That shows that, to my mind anyway, look, you're contemplating something. You're figuring out either something to do with the organization of the monastery it's running, or you're thinking about some Dhamma. So by doing that, I'm setting my mind up, giving it very clear directions. The same when you meditate, you sit down, what am I going to do now? So you give yourself clear instructions. In that book called Mindfulness, Bliss and Beyond, I call that programming your mindfulness. It's a wonderful little saying, because you do program your mindfulness. You give it the instructions. And mindfulness, as again you should know, I'm just reminding you what I've said many times, mindfulness is not just being aware, it's remembering the instructions, remembering what you're supposed to be doing. Again, using a simile of a driver of a car. A driver of a car has to be aware of the traffic around him or her, but also has to remember where they're supposed to be going. If Glenda had taken the nuns back this evening, if she sort of ends up in Wanneroo or ends up in Fremantle, and she said, "Why, you weren't watching where you were going?" She said, "I was watching where I was going. I saw all the traffic lights, I kept all the road rules." "Yeah, you were very mindful where you were driving, but you forgot your destination. What you were doing this for?" And it's the same with the meditation. Make sure you've got a clear destination, and mindfulness is supposed to remember it. So you give yourself instructions at the beginning, what you want to do and how you want to do it, and even actually how long you want to meditate for. When you give yourself the right instructions, you find you don't waste so much time. If you really do want to fantasize or go to sleep, then at least give yourself those instructions. Okay, mind, now you can have sloth and torpor for the next hour. At least so your mind knows what it's doing, rather than getting confused and getting guilty. Although I don't really recommend that. But at least, you're sort of giving yourself instructions what you want to do, rather than being dishonest. So you give yourself instructions. You sit down there, make yourself comfortable, give yourself instructions, and establish that mindfulness. Establish that mindfulness, present moment and silence. You know how to do that. Make sure that's strong. Not just strong, but also you keep the instructions in mind. What you're supposed to do and how you're supposed to do it. And motivate yourself. This is important to do. It's valuable. Meditation is great fun. Not just joyful, it gives meaning to your monastic life, it gives even like a spring to your step. Your mind becomes very clear. Even if you are writing an article about Lokuttara jhanas, you find that if you're meditating, your mind is very clear. You get much better sort of a way of writing. Much greater depth, more power, simply because your mindfulness is stronger and clearer. So whatever you're doing, it's really important. And this is why you value sort of the meditation practice. And of course, you all know that it's essential for gaining stream-winning, enlightenment. You have to do this meditation if you really want to be enlightened. And that's really what you're supposed to be here for. It's fun. It's not hard if you do it properly. And it's also incredibly rewarding. So you've got the time here. So motivate yourself. 3 months. Well, 2 months and 20 days or whatever. I'm not sure how long it's gone so far. A long time. So really get it going. the more careful effort you put in at the beginning of this retreat, the easier it will be at the beginning and the end. You just build up momentum. If you start getting into laziness and sloppiness at the beginning, you'll be lazy and sloppy all the way through, just having a hard time for yourself. It's just not worth it. So you really develop the ability to meditate and make everyone count. Of course, sometimes the meditations won't be as good, but if you give yourself the clear instructions, what you want to do at the very beginning, program the mindfulness, set it in the right direction, and then off it goes. And little by little, at the end of the meditation, you know, you learn, you know, what happened and why. So don't just get up and just go and do something else. At the end of the meditation, stop, recollect what's happened, how you feel, get into understanding the cause and effect of meditation, what works and what doesn't work, and why does it work. So every meditation, you should discipline yourself to spend at least 2 or 3 minutes at the end of every meditation just recollecting what's happened and why. You learn so much from that. And you save a lot of pain, a lot of boredom, a lot of trouble by, you know, not understanding how meditation works. You get all the information in there. Sometimes it doesn't work as you expect it to. Sometimes you are sleepy. Sometimes you are restless. But at the end of the meditation, you ask, why? Why was that the case? And you investigate and you find out for yourself. You're all intelligent people. You should be able to see the causes and the effects. And once you understand the causes and effects of meditation, you become a much more effective meditator. You don't waste so much time and get so bored, so restless, so sleepy. You understand how it works. And all my understanding of meditation never comes from books. I know that sometimes I'm quite surprised that people say, oh, Ajahn Brahm just teaches from the Visuddhimagga. You know that I've never read that book. I've picked it up and just read a page here, a page there. But I've never, ever sort of picked it up and read it consistently. So I'm not teaching from that at all. I'm teaching from my own experience of meditation and some of the things and attitudes I learned from Ajahn Chah. This is actually what I find works for me, because at the end of meditation, I was taught this a long time ago when I was a young meditator, a layperson still. At the end of the meditation, stop, reflect. What's happening and why? What does this feel like? Where did this come from? And you learned so much Dhamma from the way of meditating, and you became a skillful meditator, and you can teach it to other people now. You know, what you learned was you put the effort in the beginning to set yourself up, set the direction, and then you learn how to be gentle and kind and let go. Because every time I really force the mind, you know, which, you know, everybody does from time to time, really fighting the mind, you just got more tense and had more suffering. It just created restlessness. This is where I found, you saw it very clearly, where restlessness comes from is controlling. The more you control, the more you agitate the mind. This is where you got the simile, if the mind is like a lake, and the idea is to settle the waves on the surface of the lake so the lake is just perfectly calm, so glassy still it reflects perfectly the sky above it without any distortions. That's a simile for insight. But you want to calm that lake down first of all so there's no waves and no ripples. If you interfere with that lake, put your hand in, put your feet in, jump in, of course it's going to make more waves. You're interfering, you're agitating it. And I kept on seeing how I kept on agitating my own mind, interfering with it. I was causing the restlessness by controlling. And the worst thing, when I was restless, I tried to stop the restlessness. I was just padding down the waves and making more waves. No way would it stop. So from my own experience, you saw what was happening and why. And there was times when you really started meditating, you were restless, but I'm going to meditate, I'm going to spend the whole hour meditating, I'm going to just bear with the restlessness, but I wasn't going to fight it. I gave the directions to the mind, exactly what it was going to do, Just leave the restlessness alone, make peace with it, be kind, be gentle, just accept it. Open the door of the heart to the restlessness, gave clear instructions, and then let the mind do it. And of course, you found that if you really let it go, and you didn't interfere at all, just eventually that restlessness just got softer and more peaceful, and it completely disappeared. Do the practice, do the experiment, see the result, reflect back on it afterwards. Yeah, that's how it works. You do that plenty of times, you become knowledgeable from your own experience on how to meditate. And that knowledge means it's easier for you to meditate. Sure, you forget it sometimes, and you do the old bad habits of interfering. But the more you reflect, the more you know, the more you experience that the way to overcome restlessness is just to let things be, make peace, be kind, be gentle. The more you understand that, the more you will practice in that way. And the more you practice in that way, the easier meditation will be, the deeper and the more fun. So you learn. Same with like boredom. If you meditate, then what am I doing? What am I meditating for? It's just a waste of time. Boredom is another form of negativity. You know, you're not even looking for anything interesting. You've got no aim, no motivation. So motivate yourself. What are you meditating for? You're meditating because, you know, this is the way to enlightenment. This is the way that all great monks and nuns have become attained in the past. You see these people, it should inspire you. That's what I want to be. This is how it's done. So go for it. Make it interesting. When you start meditating, even when I start meditating, the first 5 minutes is not that pleasant sometimes. The body is aching, the body is cold or it's hot or it's got stomachache or whatever. The first 5 minutes is always a bit of a pain. But I know that if I practice properly, just it gets better every minute. That's why they kept on saying if the unwholesome states are decreasing and the wholesome states are increasing, you're going in the right direction. This is usually what happens if you just stay there in this moment, trying to be as silent as you can, not complaining, maybe just watching the breath. Yeah, at first it's not pleasant, but bear with it. Because the less you interfere, the less you control, the less you struggle and squirm, the more peaceful and happy it becomes. And I know this so well because, again, I've done this many times. I reflect afterwards. I reflect at the beginning of this meditation. This is hopeless. Body is aching, I'm tired or I'm restless. It's too cold, too hot, I've got stomachache. But I know, I just leave it alone, let it be. Just be in the moment. Try not to sort of speak too much inside. Eventually just watch your breathing. And it does get more peaceful. It does get more calm. It does get more pleasant. And I know that for a fact because I've done it so many times over so many years. So that tells me that it doesn't matter what I'm starting with, it's where this meditation is going. That's what inspires me and that's what motivates me. So even though I don't feel like meditating, I think to myself, if I don't meditate, where's it going to lead? If I do meditate, where's it going to lead? When I think like that, no option, you've got to sit down, because it's much better sitting down and meditating than just being restless. You get more peaceful, more happy, more fulfilled, more insight, everything. So you motivate yourself, no matter how you feel, to sit down and meditate. You program your mindfulness, and off it goes. You learn from cause and effect. You can interfere from time to time. If you find yourself losing the path, same way that, you know, if the driver takes a wrong turning, I notice it and I tell him, what are you going that way for? You should have turned right here, turned left here. The same way that if you've lost the path when you're meditating, you tell your mindfulness, look, that's not what you're supposed to be doing. Get back on the breath. You just have to interrupt a little bit. And I'm using the driver simile because you Anagarikas, you know, you've all driven me. And you know that when you do make a mistake, I don't shout at you and beat you up. You know, no way do I even shout at my mindfulness and beat that up if it makes a wrong turning. Just gently, okay, come back again. This is the way you should be going. So bring the mindfulness back onto the object. And you keep doing that until the mindfulness learns. And again, with the drivers, you know, some of you have come from overseas. You didn't know the way to go to Nolamara, or you didn't know the way to go to Armadale Hardware for Ajahn Bamali. Now you know it very well, so it's easy to go there. You get trained. It's the same way with your mind. It knows the way to go to peace, to silence, to stillness. And eventually, when it knows that, it's almost automatic. And as the mindfulness, or you just need to sit in the passenger seat and just give the instructions and just let it happen. And as you start to get into just the beginning states of meditation, you become peaceful, you get some happiness. You just get the beginning stages and all the motivation in the world is there for you. Meditation is working. You're getting some happiness. You're getting some peace. You can feel this actually works. And meditation is so potent that once you get to start working, you just want more and more and more. You're more alert, more mindful, more happy, less upset, less angry, more positive. Everything tastes more delicious. The birds look more beautiful. Everything sounds better, feels better, the deeper you go in meditation. And there comes to a point in meditation. I call it sort of the tipping point. Just, you know, get to the top of the hill and it's all downhill from there on. In other words, the snowball effect, you just... the meditation just takes over. You want to meditate more. You're sitting and walking, you just can't get enough sometimes. Why is that? Because it's fun, because it's peaceful, because it's beautiful. And all the time you're learning so much about some of the difficulties you get in meditation. Why it is that sometimes people think so much is one of the dangers in meditation. And that once you start to get a strong mind, once the mindfulness starts to get very powerful, people like to think a lot. This is not the earlier thinking, not the restless thinking. This is directed thinking. At this particular stage, you can take a theme of Dhamma, say it's dependent origination, and you can just keep focused on that theme of Dhamma for minutes, for hours, simply because... the mind has got focus and direction and a little bit of power. But that is a danger. You find you're just wasting time. Sometimes I call that, you know, Mara's just last gasp attempt to stop you getting into jhanas by giving you some Dharma to think about. And you find you can have powerful Dharma. Some monks have said that at that particular stage in the meditation, the mind has got peaceful and calm and it's got focus, there's hardly any restlessness there. Sometimes they can give themselves the most brilliant Dhamma discourses. If only they could sort of put that on a CD, it would be brilliant. Now that's a delusion there, be careful. That's called Dhamma Vitakka, and that's one of the obstacles to deep meditation. What it is here is you're learning from experience that there's more to the Dhamma than that sort of strong thinking mind. Your job is to remember the instructions. This is not the time for thinking of Dhamma in the middle of a meditation. You think about that at the very end, or even better, just afterwards. In meditation, your job is trying to let go of thinking and see what stillness is like. Just to let go of the world and see what it's like inside. To let go of interfering and see what happens when you really leave things alone. And to see how peaceful things can become. And you can never get peaceful when you're always interfering with things. For the last year, I was giving a simile in Nolamara of the simile of the stone bench. Meditation is like... on your life's journey, just always going somewhere, always on the move, always going to the next thing. So it's like being an abbot or being a second or third monk. There's always another letter to write, always another article to review, always another building to sort of erect or sort of a maintenance problem to fix. Have you ever noticed there's always something more to do, and most people are always going on to the next thing, so much so they never know peace or stillness at all. And meditation stops that process. Instead of going on to the next thing with the assumption that then I'll be happy, then I can meditate, say, no, this place right now is where I stop. This is where I make my stand. Doesn't matter where it is, how it is, pleasant or unpleasant, this is where I stop. So you stop and you sit on a stone, cold, hard, bumpy, lumpy bench, which is not comfortable at all. That's what happens when you stop and try and meditate. It's not pleasant when you start. But if you stay on that bench, you don't go on to something else. You don't go on to the next moment. You don't go on to the next thought. You don't go on to the next meditation object. You stay put with where you are. You don't try and escape. Stay with what you've got, no matter what it is. Pain, heat, tiredness, doesn't matter. Stay with what you've got. When we stay with what we've got, it's like sitting down on the stone bench and finding something strange happens. The lumpy, cold, hard stone gets smooth, soft, and comfortable. The less you move, the more comfortable you feel. The less you try and do something, the more pleasant it becomes. And it's like that hard stone bench you started off sitting on. You haven't gone anywhere, you haven't changed anything, but the whole moment where you stop changes. The bench becomes soft, comfortable, and very, very pleasant. And the longer you stay there, the more pleasant it becomes. Which is why many, many times I've said that meditation is nothing more than being more fully where you already are. It's not moving on to another thing, not going forward, not going backwards, but going inwards. When you understand that, this is what you give your instructions to the mindfulness. Go inwards, never onwards. This moment now, doesn't matter how unpleasant it is, how uninspiring it is, how unpromising it is, with this body, with this temperature, with this tiredness, with this stomach ache, with this knee ache, who cares? This is where I make my stand. I'm going to stop here. And you stop, mindful, not moving, allowing this moment to be, embracing it, being kind, making peace this moment, no matter what it is. You find the moment changes, becomes soft and peaceful. And then you understand what meditation is, this soft, peaceful, gentle, wonderful abiding. No matter what you're experiencing, no matter what the object is, it's how you relate to it, how you're experiencing it. That's the meditation practice. You make peace with it, you're kind to it, you're gentle with it, you stop interfering, and everything changes. You become peaceful. You become at ease. The mind becomes soft and gentle. And the meditation starts to work. And when you start doing things like that, you understand what meditation is and how to meditate. You just want more and more and more. And the more you do, the deeper you get. And you find, despite yourself, you sit for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours with no effort at all. It just happens because this is the nature of a mind which learns how to stop, which is devoted to meditation, sees its value, knows how to program mindfulness, especially at the beginning, knows exactly what works and what doesn't work by reviewing things at the end of each meditation, and knows just how to be in the moment. It knows how to let go and not interfere at first. It holds the mind even uncomfortably there, knowing in a few minutes it's going to get very peaceful and nice. When you know that, meditation becomes far easier for you. And when you learn how to meditate, you become skillful meditators. Then that is a huge value in your monastic life. It's relatively easy to keep your precepts, even though that sometimes it's a bit sort of irritating. But to be able to meditate, to be able to get peace, stillness, and really deep stillness and deep peace, oh, that's the most important thing. Even more important than your precepts, I would say. To be able to get a still, happy mind. And that's certainly what I'm trying to encourage in this monastery and in other monasteries as well. To get that stillness, because that's the Dhamma. You're right there with the peace, the stillness, the happiness of the mind. And you see the causes of it. Just as we just chanted now, all these five khandhas, you know, that these, if they did belong to a self, we'd be able to tell these khandhas, oh body, be this way, be this, that way. But because it's not ours, we can't tell it to do anything. We can't tell our Vedana, our feeling, oh please be happy, please be peaceful, pain, go away. It just doesn't respond to that. We can't tell our perceptions to be this way or that way. We can't tell our will to be this way or that way. Oh, may my sankharas be like this or be like that. You just can't do it, the Buddha was saying. So please leave it alone. Let it be, even your consciousness. Oh, may my consciousness be like this and not like that. All you do is set up mindfulness and then just back off. And learn how to be peaceful. But put the hours into this, because you'll make mistakes from time to time. When you make mistakes, find out why. Be this is what we call diligence. It's not just diligence in putting time in or putting effort in. It's diligence in putting the time and putting wisdom in. Be diligent with your wisdom practice. Contemplate. Figure it out. Cause and effect. What works, what doesn't work. And learn. Because monks like me can't always be around just telling you what to do. All we can tell you is how you learn. So you can be independent. So you can just go back to your huts and you meditate. And I know you're getting peaceful, you're getting happy. And you're getting deep. And you're becoming someone who deserves to wear the robes of a Buddha, male or female. You become peaceful, you become an inspiration to others. And because you become happy as well. The deeper you get in meditation, the less you want of the world. You just don't get interested in things like sex or movies or books or music or anything like that. What do you want that for? Because you're peaceful, you're calm. All of those are just escapes for the restless and the bored. For those who know meditation, just, wow, how can you become bored with a peaceful mind? How can you want anything more than the bliss of deep meditation? It's just there for you. So that means that many of your defilements, the sorts of stuff which embarrass you and cause you pain and trouble, these just fade away. Even what other people say about you, or what they do, or words they say, when you've got into deep meditation, you just don't give a damn what people say. They can say the most stupid and hurtful things. Just like Venerable Sariputta, who was abused by that man on Alms Round, and then somebody asked him, so when you're upset, all the gross and cruel words he said. He said, it's just no wind, it's just the objects of the ear, bass, just sound, that's all. It just comes and goes. And then that guy hit him on the back. So didn't that hurt? No, it's just feeling coming and going, that's all. And that's a sort of a great meditator. And that's actually, how can you do that? You only do that if you've got some really nice meditation happening. And just you don't worry about those things. You're so peaceful. Who wants to disturb the peace? Your peace. Because of stupid things other people say. That's why I wrote in the book, never allow other people to control your happiness. Your happiness is your concern. It's no one else's domain. Other people can do and say what they want, but I'm still going to be happy. It's amazing that you can do that, and you know you can do that by being peaceful, learning how to meditate, learning how to make the mind still, and let things be and let things go. It's not that hard, and deeper as you go deep in your meditation, those amazing things happen. And it just happens all by itself sometimes. I know that people ask, well, what should you do next? A lot of times that people, they just get into these deep meditations, they haven't got a clue what they're doing, and sometimes that's the best, so they don't interfere and start controlling it. But you know what happens as you start to let go and you see the breath coming in and going out, it starts to get so soft and peaceful. The peace and the softness become the most important thing. More, even more so than the breath. Just the mind just can see the breath, but the peace and the joy, that's what it really sees the most. Just like the food, doesn't matter what you're eating as long as it's sweet and tasty. Because it's that tastiness which you notice most. And it's the tastiness of the breath, the deliciousness of it. And that becomes so dominant, of course you can't wander off anyway. You're just blissing out, having a great time just in your meditation. It's just a matter of time, just how deep that bliss becomes, turns into nimittas and jhanas. And these are there for you. Just go for it. Because why not get a jhana in this meditation retreat? A real big one. And it just so it blows you away. And if you can just do one of those, one really juicy jhana, then that's just worth a whole retreat. What it means is now you get some idea of what the Dhamma is. You know, sometimes, you know, my job, teaching all sorts of people and sometimes hanging out with Tibetan monks and Zen monks and all these other people and getting into arguments about what is the right ordination and the wrong ordination, and just sometimes, yeah, you got to do that. But when you get into deep meditation, there's all your answers. That's where all the problems get solved. Just in the experience of deep letting go. If a person's experienced these states, then they know what Buddhism is all about. That's why anyone who says that jhanas aren't important, they've never experienced one. Anyone's experienced a real one, no way will they say it's not important. This is the gold mine of Dhamma. This is like the library of insight. This is just a treasure chest, you know, which all the stuff put in there by the Buddha. It's just amazing what's in there. So you get into it, go for it. Otherwise, what the heck are you doing, be a monk or a nun, if you're not going for these states? And embarrassing sometimes that it's true, sometimes lay people sometimes get these states. And there you are, you've given up so much becoming a monk, a nun. Now you really have committed yourself much more than any lay person going on a 9-day retreat. So why can't you do it? So say, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it this retreat. Motivate yourself. But do it consistently and carefully. Every meditation, program your mindfulness. Understand not just you want to do it, but understand the how to. And every meditation, learn. Learn every time. What did I do? What worked? What didn't work? And that way, if you're consistent and you do it the proper way, there's no reason why it won't happen for you. It's only when you waste time, you just meditate, and at the end you don't even think what happened and why it worked or why it didn't work, where you just waste time fantasizing or dreaming or being restless and thinking about the next book you're going to write or whatever, where you're going to go next. It's not wasting your time. It's a great opportunity. Motivate yourself. Know how to do it. The instructions are all there. It's very clear. And just go off and do it. And all the Dhamma talks in the world, all the suttas you can ever read, all the deepest teachings and talks won't be worth, as this Buddha said, a 1/16th part of the experience of a deep, blissful unity of mind. When you get one of those, wow, this is what monastic life is all about. You'll just be blissing out, having a great time. And this is what we're supposed to be here for. So that's all I can say for this evening.
Bhagavato Sāvaka Sangho.